Okay, we're beginning here, four lines from the bottom of Chof Hei Amud Bet. The Gemara is continuing here to discuss the different nizakim and the possibility of taking a principle from one nezek to another nezek in order to make it chayav, where we once thought it was patur, or taking some of the unique characteristics of one of the nizakim or avod nizakim over to the other. And here the Gemara asks, Utehei shein v'regel chayav b'rshut rabim mikal v'chomer. Shein v'regel, which we've otherwise thought was patur b'shut rabim. Now the Gemara suggests maybe it should be chayav in reshut rabim from a kal v'chomer. Uma keren shebreshut anizak enu mishalem elechatzi nezek. When it comes to keren in the property of the one who's victimized or been damaged, there you only pay half damages. Reshut rabim chayavet. In the public domain, you are still chayav for keren. Shein v'regel, when it comes to shein v'regel that are b'shut anizak mishalem nezek shalem. There you pay full nezek. Einu din shebreshut rabim chayav. Certainly in the reshut rabim you should be chayav. Amar kra, the pasuk says, and this is really the answer to many of these questions, is that we have a pasuk or limud or gzerat ha-ketuv that tells us that that logical argument, while it might be true, the pasuk tells us otherwise, and that's what it says here. Ubier b'steacher. It says that the damage of shein v'regel must be done in the field of the nizak velo b'reshut rabim. And not in the public domain. Gemara says, Midei kula ke'amrinan? Palgo ke'amrinan? Wait a minute. The p'tur that you find over there might be in this manner. It might say that, despite the fact that the pasuk tells you that in reshut rabim you are p'tur, it might mean that you're p'tur from full damages, but you're still chayav in chatzi, or half damages. And as the Balei HaTosafot point out here, there's no question to say that had it not been for the pasuk ubier b'steacher, which limited the obligations of shein and regel to the chatzer and nizak, then in reshut rabim you would have been chayav nezek shalem. And therefore it's possible here that the miut, the exclusionary pasuk that says ubier b'steacher, comes to teach you that you're not chayav for nezek shalem in the reshut rabim, but you are chayav for chatzi nezek b'reshut rabim. And that would follow also from the kal v'chomer that we're making from Karen. Amar Kroa, the pasuk says, by a shor tam, v'chei gof shor ish et shor reyu v'meit, macharu et shor echai, v'chatsu et kaspo, v'gam et ameit yechatsun. So here it says, v'chatsu et kaspo, kaspo shel zeh v'lo kaspo shel acher. That this idea of half damages only applies to Karen and does not apply to regel. And for that reason, you can't say that the p'tur ubir b'steacher is coming to teach you, don't pay nezek shalem, but rather pay chatzi nezek, because we already have a miut in the pasuk that tells us that this concept of chatzi nezek is only applicable by keren, and is not applicable by shein v'regel. The Gemara now continues with this line of questioning, and says, v'lo tei shein v'regel chayevet b'rshut anizak, ele chatzi nezek mikal v'chomer mikeren. It should be that shein v'regel should only be obligated to pay half damages in the chatzer nizak, in the field of the person who is damaged from a kal v'chomer keren. Ma keren b'shut rabim chayevet. When it comes to keren, we know that there's no differentiation made between the public domain and the chatzer nizak. In both those cases, you are chayevet b'shut nizak ein mishalemet el chatzi nezak. And despite the fact, when it comes to the property of the one who's being victimized over here, he only pays chatzi nezek. Shein v'regel shebreshut rabim tura. Shein v'regel, which in the reshut rabim are patur, enu din shebreshut anizak mishalem chatzi nezek. Certainly in the property of the nizak, then they should only have to pay half damages. Now the Balei HaTosafot say, didn't we deal with this already? We just said before, b'chatsu et kaspo teaches us that the chatzi nezek only applies by keren and not by shein v'regel. So why over here does the Gemara not use the same limud and say, okay, it's a very nice drasha, but if I am suggesting that shein v'regel should be chayav chatzi nezek b'reshut anizak, that goes against this pasuk of v'chatsu et kaspo. The Tosfot says, v'ish lamar, de'en lama'ik mi kaspo el chatzi nezek shemishtalem mi gufo. The exclusion of chatzi nezek from that pasuk is only a case where the chatzi nezek is paid out of the animal itself, meaning that the liability is capped at the value of the animal that did damage. And therefore, in the case of chatzi nezek migufo, which would have been the case where we had the limud to teach us by shein v'regel that maybe it should be chayav chatzi nezek in reshut rabim, because there we were learning it out of keren. And from keren, we would have said, just like by keren, it's chatzi nezek migufo. So too, by the case of Regel, we would say, Shein V'Regel, we would say that it's Chatzi Nezek Migufo. And there the Pasuk says, no, Chatzi Nezek Migufo is only true by Karen, not by Shein V'Regel. But over here, Kan Imaya B'Chatzer Nizak, here, if the obligation to pay Chatzi Nezek was in the property of Nizak, Chatzi Nezek Hava Mishtalem Min Aliyah. Over there, we would have not capped out the liability, and you would have to pay full damages no matter what the value of the Shor Mazik is. And since it's not similar in character to Karen, you wouldn't exclude it from the Pasuk. And Tosfot says, well, if we're learning out of Karen, where would you ever have a paradigm to suggest that the Chatzi Nezek of Regel, B'Chatzar Nizak, should be Chayav Chatzi Nezek Min Aliyah? And the answer is, Chatzi Nezek Tzororot. We already have an example or paradigm within Regel, where you pay Chatzi Nezek and you still pay Min Aliyah. And based on that, we would suggest here that in the Chatzar Nizak for Regel, you'd pay Chatzi Nezek Min Aliyah. If that's the case, it's not similar to the Chatzi Nezek of Karen, and we can't exclude it from the Pasuk of Echatzu et Kaspo. And that's why we need the additional Pasuk over here, Amakra, Yishalem Tashlamim Me'aliyah. We have the Pasuk that's written by the Nezek of Shein V'Regel, which says, Meitav Sedeu U'Meitav Karmo Yishalem. As Rashi says, that Yishalem over here means Ligamre, means full, and full compensation or restitution that's being made. And therefore, there's only full restitution. There's no Chatzi Nezek. And that's why Shein V'Regel B'Shut HaNizak would be Chayav Nezek Shalem. So now the Gemara continues. Belote Karen B'Shut HaRabim Chayav Mikal V'Chomer. Karen and the Reshut HaRabim should not be obligated to pay from a Kal V'Chomer. Umash Shein V'Regel Sh'B'Shut HaNizak Nezek Shalem. That the Shein and Regel, when they're in the property of the person that is being damaged, there they pay full Nezek. B'Reshut HaRabim P'Turah. Despite that fact, in Reshut HaRabim, they are Patur. Karen Sh'B'Shut HaNizak. When we're talking about Karen, which is in the Reshut HaNizak, there he pays Chatzi Nezek. There he pays half the value, which is obviously less than Shein V'Regel, Einu Din Sh'B'Reshut HaRabim P'Turah. Certainly in Reshut HaRabim, they should be Patur. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Yechatzun. Ein Chatzi Nezek Chaluk Lo B'Reshut HaRabim V'Lo B'Reshut HaYachid. As Rashi points out, the word Yechatzun in the Pasuk, when it deals with Karen Tam, is extraneous. It says, V'chi go shorish et shor re'eu, v'meit, v'machoru et shor achai, v'chatzu et kaspo, v'gam et ameit yechatzun. So over there, it could have just said, v'gam et ameit. And we know that it's being modified, v'chatzu et kaspo, v'gam et ameit would have connected it. What's the addition of the word yechatzun? That is for this limud of Rabbi Yochanan that says that the word yechatzun now says to us that there's no differentiation within Karen between Reshut HaYachid and Reshut HaRabim. And based on that, the Karen pays Chatzi Nezek whether it's in Reshut HaNizak or whether it's in Reshut HaRabim. Now the Gemara moves on to the next possible question, which is, V'hei Adam Chayav B'Kofer Mikal V'Chomer. A person who kills someone, Chas V'Shalom, maybe he should be Chayav Kofer from a Kal V'Chomer. U'mah Shor, Sheinu Chayav Ba'arba'ad Dvarim. A shore where the shore does damage only pays Nezek and doesn't pay for the other four items, which are Tsar, Ripoy, Shevet, and Boshet, Chayav B'Kofer. If the shore kills a man, then they pay Kofer, or the Balim of the shore pays Kofer to the family of the victim. Adam Shechayav Ba'arba'a Dvarim, a person who is Chayav in these four items, meaning that if a person does damage, not only do they pay for Nezek, they also pay for Tsar, Ripoy, Shevet, and Boshet. Einu Din She'ei Chayav B'Kofer, then certainly they should be obligated to pay Kofer or make restitution to the victim's family. Now, the Rishonim over here deal with the problem. If he killed someone, then he's going to be put to death or he's going to be sent to Galut. In both of those instances, we have a principle of Ken Lai D'Rabimine, which is that he's already getting the more severe punishment. And that more severe punishment will override the monetary obligations over here. So why would you suggest that you have to pay kofar? So Rashi explains that the case here is Gugon Mezid, Velo Atrube, Delete Bar Ktala, Velo Bar Galut. It's a case here that he did it intentionally, but there was no Hatra'a. And so therefore he's not going to end up with a death penalty, and he's not going to end up in Galut. So what Rashi suggests is that the kofar payment is being made in a situation in which the other punishments will not be carried out. There will not be a death penalty. There will not be galut. And the Gemara's question revolves around a case where there aren't other punishments. Where there aren't the other punishments to bring him kapara, maybe you should have to pay kofar in order to rectify the situation. That's the way that Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot over here say, based on a question from the Pasuk that says, Melo tichu kofer lenefesh rutzeach, meaning that the Pasuk says you're not allowed to take monetary payment or compensation to get a person out of their death penalty or out of their galut. So why isn't this a violation of that principle? So the Balei Tosafot suggests that the Gemara's intent over here is not that you would pay kofar instead of the death penalty, not that you would pay kofar instead of going to galut, but rather you would pay it in addition to the death penalty or in addition to the galut that was being meted out here to the killer, similar to the case by the shore that kills. By the shore that kills, the Pasuk says that v'himit ish o isha hashor yisakel, the shore is put to death, begam balav yumat, and also the owners die, not literally, but they pay kofar. So in that case, there is a chiyuv mita that is carried out, as well as the kofar being paid. Similarly, over here, we would suggest that the person who killed would be chayav mita, as well as have to pay kofar in this instance. And even though in general, we do not allow for a punishment of death that includes a monetary penalty as well, that does not revolve around kofar, but rather about monetary payments, as Tosafot says, towards other violations or other parties. Over here, where the kofar is coming, the kapara, the Balei Tosafot suggests that that would not be excluded from having a dual punishment, a punishment of both mitah and kofar. Now, the Balei Tosafot also asks, don't we have a principle of Tana de Bei Chizkiah? Tana de Bei Chizkiah believes that even when the death penalty or the galut is not carried out befoal, in reality, still it provides a pter from monetary compensation. So why don't we invoke Tana de Bei Chizkiah in this instance? So over here too, if there is a death penalty that is warranted, even though it's not carried out, maybe that should deduce a pter for the kofar. The Balei Tosafot say that kofar is in a different category, and without a specific exclusion, we would not have said that kofar is left out. The Rashba over here suggests that this Gemara is not according to Tana de Bei Chizkiah. It actually argues on Tana de Bei Chizkiah and believes that you can have a penalty or monetary penalty when it comes to situations in which the actual punishment is not carried out. On the other hand, there are achronim, and it seems pretty logical to suggest that over here that the kofar, the kapara that is being done, is totally different. And the next Tosafot suggests something along those lines as well, which is that the pter of Chizkiah is only when we're talking about monetary payments that are outside of the mita itself. But over here, where there is a requirement of kofar, which is part of the kapara for the individual, over there, we're not going to say because he didn't get the death penalty, he should be patur because he was deserving of a death penalty. He should be patur from kapara. No, over here, the kofar is acting as kapara. And for that reason, he would be obligated despite the fact that there is a chiyuv mita or a chiyuv galut here, even though it's not carried out befoal. Now, the Gemara answers and says, we can't say that, or we can't have kofar by Adam, because the pasuk says, Amar Kra, it says that by the killing of the shore, Natan Pidyon Nafsho Kichol Ashe Yushat Alav. So over there, when it says Kichol Ashe Yushat Alav, Alav Vola Adam, means that only for a shore that kills is there kofar, but not for an Adam that does damage or kills, will there be kofar. So for that reason, there's a mute that says that kofar is not applicable by Adam. Over here, you have a machloket between the Ktzot HaChoshen and others like the Agot HaShri, as to what this means. The Ktzot HaChoshen in other places tells us that the Ptur of Gamlei D'Rabbi Minei, which tells you that when you have a death penalty or more severe penalty, we exempt you from the lesser penalty. For instance, making compensation or paying money, that comes to teach you that you are Ptur Midinei Adam. But Midinei Shamayim, or let's say Yidei Shamayim, you really should pay the money, even though the person is receiving the death penalty, because the Ptur is just an exemption, doesn't say you don't need Kapara. Over here, on the other hand, the Ktzot HaChoshen says that when it comes to Allah Bela Adam, that's a miyut begamre. It's not suggesting that you should pay kofar just so you have an exemption. It's saying that you're not obligated at all to pay kofar. And therefore, the Ktzot HaChoshen over here, unlike by Kamla D'Rabbi Minei, believes that the individuals here are completely patur, and there's not even a reason, let's say, the Shemaim, to pay kofar to the victim's family. The death penalty or the whatever punishment would or would not be carried out on this individual will suffice. On the other hand, the Hagot HaShri suggests over here that there's still an obligation, let's say, Yidei Shamayim, and therefore the person should make restitution and should pay kofar despite the fact that they're exempt based on the pasuk in the Torah. And that will also have a nafkamina if tafsinan. If the victims grab the money, will we take it back from them? According to the Ketot HaChoshen, the answer is yes, because there's no obligation here. Then the Hagota Shri says that bidei adam, we have no way to take or to extract the money in Beit Din. But if the victims already grabbed the money, Beit Din's not going to reverse that because there is an obligation that exists to pay for the kofar. Now the Gemara continues and says, Beishor chayav ba'arba dvarim mikal v'chomer. Now that we've established that there's this distinction between kofar that you do pay by a shor versus kofar that you do not pay by adam, now you have a kal v'chomer which says that the shor should be chayav ba'arba dvarim that adam is chayav in. Ma adam shenu chayav b'kofar chayav ba'arba dvarim. A person who is chayav in the arba dvarim, but yet there is no kofar by him, shor shechayav b'kofar, and udin shu chayav b'arba dvarim, a shor which is obligated to make restitution or pay kofar, then certainly they should have to pay the arba dvarim. Amar Kra, the pasuk says, with regards to damage to another party, and where we learn out the limudim of these additional payments beyond the nezek, it says, ish ki itain, mum be'amito, kasher asa, kenya aselo. So over there, the Gemara learns from this that it's ish be'amito, velo shor be'amito. That is only true when it's one person to another person. It is not true when it comes to an animal that does that damage. It's only when a person does the damage that we'll say you're chayav for the arba advarim, whereas by a shor, he will not be chayav for the arba advarim. Now the Gemara asks a question. Ibailuhu. Regel shedarsal gabei tinok. You have an animal that trampled a child and killed it, b'chatzer nizak, in the field of the nizak, mahu. What is the din there? Shetishalem kofar, that you should pay kofar. We know the din of kofar and for the killing of an individual is found by the nezek or the av of keren. The question now of the Gemara is that applicable by the case of regel and shein? The question does not come up with Adam, Ish, or Bor, because we already established before that it's Alav, Velo, Ala Adam. That we learned before that Kasher Yushat Alav teaches you that Kofar is only applicable by Karen. It's not applicable by Adam, and the same mute would also apply to Ish and Bor, that they would be excluded. The question only really revolves around the case of Shane and Regel, which is that when they say Alav, Velo, Ala Adam, or that mute, is that miut coming to say that any other av of nezek is completely excluded? And that would mean that shein and regel is also excluded. Or is it coming to say alav means only for a shor? Now a shor involves numerous avot nezikim, including keren, shein, and regel. And so maybe all of those are subsumed under the alav or the shor that is mentioned there. And shein and regel will be similar to keren, and therefore you will be obligated in that case to pay kofar. Mi amrinan mi didahava keren, just like by keren. Karen came into Avid Trey Utlata Zimne Orchehu. By Karen, when you've done it two or three times, it becomes Orche and you become a Mu'ad. Gemara here might be trying to address the Machloket of Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as to how many times it takes to become a Mu'ad, whether it's two or three times to become a Mu'ad. Umishalem Kofar, and over there you're obligated to pay Kofar once the animal is a Mu'ad. Hachanami Loshna. So too by Shein Veregel, which are Mu'adin B'Tchilatan. From the beginning, they're considered to be Mu'ad. So too over there, you'd have to make compensation and pay kofar. Or Dilma Karen Kabanatol Azik. Or maybe Karen has a unique property, which is its intent to do damage. And that unique property is what makes you chayav in kofar. And that's not applicable by Shein Veregel. Ha ain Kabanatol Azik. By Shein Veregel, you don't have that, and therefore you would not have an obligation of kofar. And in essence, as Soloveitchik terms, this chakira or this question here really revolves around how we view the damage of Karen. Do we use the damage of Karen or the obligation of Karen having to do with the fact that it's Orchehu? I mean, the fact that it's a Mu'ad, that's what obligates you here. If that's the case, by Shein and Regel, we would say the same thing because the obligation stems from the fact that this is normal behavior. And Shein and Regel, normal behavior, you're going to be obligated for also by Kofar. Or do we say that it's Kavanatol HaZik? It's the fact that there was a Maaseh Ritzicha. There was an intended killing that was done here. And that's what obligates you. So by Karen, you have such a factor that's involved because it's coming out to Lazik. By Vishen Veregel, you don't have a Maaseh Ritzicha because there was no intent to do damage or to kill the individual. And therefore, there'll be no obligation over here. Mar says, Tashma, let us prove it from this case over here, which is, Ichnish Shorol de Chatzer Balabayit his animal went into the property of the balabait, shelo b'rishut, without permission, v'nagacho the balabait, and then it gores the balabait, umet. Then the balabait was killed or victimized by the shor. Hashor b'skila, the shor is put to death because the shor is chayav mitah, whether it's a tam or a muad, it is put to death for killing an individual. Ubalaf, when it comes to the owners, ben tam, ben muad, mishalem, kofer shalem. Whether it's a tam or a mu'ad, they pay kofer shalem, divrei Rabbi Tarfon. This can only be according to the sheet of Rabbi Tarfon. Remember, as we saw in the Mishnah, that Rabbi Tarfon's position is that when it comes to the chatzer and izak, Karen pays nezek shalem. Whether it's a tam or whether it's a mu'ad, it pays nezek shalem. For that reason, so too by kofer, we would say the same thing, that it would pay kofer. If it was a mu'ad, it would pay full kofer. So too, for a tam, it would pay full kofer. Kofer shalem betam, the Rabbi Tarfon, minale. How does Rabbi Tarfon ever get around to having kofer shalem in a tam? Lav mishum, it has to be because the sabar like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. He holds like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the amar tam mishalem chatzi kofer b'shut rabim, who believes that a tam pays for chatzi kofer in reshut rabim. This is a position that we saw earlier in the Masechta and Daf Tedvav. Over there we saw that the Rishonim say that we never see this explicitly in the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. The Rabbeinu Chananel says it over here as well, that it's something that we infer or we suppose that Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, not that we know explicitly that he makes such a statement, but the Gemara everywhere attributes this view to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And there he believes that just like a mu'ad is chayav nezek shalem in Reshut Rabim and chatzi nezek for tam, so too by kofir. If the mu'ad is chayav full kofir in the Reshut Rabim, he'll be chayav chatzi kofir in the Reshut Rabim. That kofir is no different than nezek. It's just probably an enhanced form of nezekin. It's the ultimate nezek, which is that you've killed the individual. And therefore, just like by the reshut rabim, you pay nezek shalem for mu'ad and chatzi nezek for a tam, so too by kofir, you'd pay full kofir in the reshut rabim and chatzi nezek for a tam in the reshut rabim. And then, mighty lay mi kal v'chomer mi regel. And then he'll do Rabbi Tarfon, the same thing he did with regards to nezek, is bring it from a kal v'chomer reshut rabim into the chatzer and izak. Which is, just like Rabbi Tarfon believes that I can make a kal v'chomer when it comes to Karen that pays chatzi nezek by tam in the reshut rabim, Rabbi Tarfon believes pays nezek shalem in the chatzer ha-nizak because of a kal v'chomer from regel, which is what we saw in the Mishnah. Rabbi Tarfon says, if regel is patur in reshut rabim, yet pays nezek shalem in the reshut ha-nizak, then certainly Karen that pays chatzi nezek in the reshut rabim, certainly they should pay nezek shalem when it comes to the chatzer ha-nizak. And again, if we're looking at mita or kofer being simply the ultimate form of nezek, then that same kal v'chomer would apply based on Rabbi Tarfon's logic, which says that if you're chayav chatzi kofer in the reshut rabim, then certainly you're going to be chayav kofer shalem in the reshut nizak. Alma ika kofer beregel. The only way that this kal v'chomer works is if you believe that there is kofer by regel. Because if there's no kofer by regel, then what kal v'chomer do you have over here? The kal v'chomer is based on the fact that for Karen, you're chayav chatzi kofer in the reshut rabim based on Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And Rego and Shane, you are a patur. We come into the Chatzer and Izak, we say Rego and Shane are Chayav, full. Over here, it seemingly means full kofer. Therefore, Karen, the Chatzer and Izak, should also be Chayav, full kofer. That only works if Shane and Rego are Chayav, be kofer. So Amar Rav Shimi Minarda, Tana Minizikin, the Rego Mighty Law. Wait a minute, they don't have to learn it out of kofer. Maybe the Kal V'chomer is similar to Rabbi Tarfon's Kal V'chomer in the Mishnah, which stems from Nezek and not from kofer. He simply says that by Nezek, you see, that just like by Nezek, it says that Chatzi Nezek of Karen in Reshut Rabim becomes full Nezek in the Reshut HaNizak because of Regel, which is Patur in the Reshut Rabim, which becomes full Nezek in the Reshut HaNizak. And then based on that, we'll say by Kofer, the same thing is true. Chatzi Kofer of Karen will become full Kofer of Karen in the Reshut HaNizak. But that doesn't prove to us anything about Shane Veregel and Kofer. Maybe that's not the reason for the Kal V'chomer, not the basis for the Kal V'chomer at all. Where it says, V'lifroch, if that's the case that you're learning out of Nizakin, Nizakin have certain character traits to them that would prevent us from making such a Kal V'chomer. Mala Nizakin, Veregel, Shekein, Yeshnan, Be'esh. Wait a minute, when it comes to the Nezek of Regel, maybe the reason that the Nezek of Regel is more Chamur, or different than Kofer, is because of the fact that it has Yeshnan Ba'esh. It is applicable Ba'esh. Meaning, since there is no kofer Ba'esh, which we learned from Alav velo al Adam before. And I said before, that means not just that Adam doesn't have kofir, but neither does Eish, neither does Bor. So over here we would say, how can you prove anything from Nezek? By Nezek, Eish has application by Nezek. Kofir has no application by Eish. That means that Nezek might be more chamur than kofir because it has a broader application. It applies by Eish, which isn't true by kofir. If that's the case, how can you prove anything? Just because something is true by Nezek doesn't mean it's true by kofir as well. So Gemara says, mi tamun. We can learn it out of tamun by Eish. Tamun by Eish says that also by Nezek you are patur. So if that's the case, if I have an object which is hidden, that object that is hidden or buried inside of the piles of grain, we said by Eish, you're not chayav for that object. So in that case, you can't prove anything. Just like by kofir, you're patur by Eish, so too by nezakin, you're also patur by Eish in this case. So let us say the Kal Vachomer is from a case of tamun. The case of tamun says that by regel, you are patur and reshut rabim, yet when you go to reshut anizak, you're chayav nezak shalem, even it is tamun. And now I can't question you from Eish, because by Eish, there's no application, no differentiation between Nezek and Kofir. In both cases, you will be Patur. Gemara says, Mala Tamun, Sheken Yeshno Bebor. Wait a minute, Tamun is applicable by Bor, which means that Bor, there is no Kofir, yet there is a punishment, or there is necessity to make compensation for Nezek that is done in the Bor, even if it is Tamun. And Rashi over here explains, Yeshno Bebor, Shemiyah Gdi Tamun Besak. If you have an animal that's inside of a sack, Obe Martsu for some sort of wrap, beneath Galgel Minafal the Bor, Chayav, and it rolls in and falls into the Bor, then you are Chayav. This is similar to the position of the Balei HaTosafot back on Yud Amud Aleph. Over there, Rashi gave an example of Talmun Bebor as being a case where the animal is carrying grains on its back inside of a basket or sack and then falls into the Bor, that you'd be Patur over there. Tosafot took issue with that and says he's not sure that that's the case. And he says the example must be where there's an animal inside of the sack. It's only true by balei chayim. It's not true by grains. Over here, Rashi seems to have followed that position of the balei tosafot and gives an example of tamun and the boar as being something that's wrapped up inside of a sack. You can go back to Yudam and Aleph. We discussed it more extensively there, the difference in opinion between Rashi and the balei tosafot. What's interesting here is that Rabbeinu Chananel adds on another possibility. He actually brings two possibilities as to what the tamun case is over here. He says, one possibility is, Ezu Tamun Chayav Bebor, Yesh Mefarshim Mishomer Ubar Vimei Para. Some suggest that it's a fetus inside of the mother, and that's the case of Tamun. The Rabbeinu Chananel rejects that and says that Ubar Yerechimo, the Ubar is an extension of the mother, and that's not called Tamun at all. Then he gives an alternate answer, which he favors and says, V'yesh Mishomrim Habor Atzmo Imhu Tamun. It's a case where the boar itself was covered. So even though it was covered, and technically you're patur when it's covered, that's only when the cover is sufficient protection to stop people from going in there. But in a case where the boar is covered and it's not sufficient protection, then they fall in, maybe that's a case of tamun bebor, that you would be chayav. That's the way the Rabbeinu Chananel explains tamun bebor over here. And the Gemara says, wait a minute, if you use tamun, that gets you out of the problem of saying by eish that you have a difference between nezek and kofir, but it doesn't help you by bor. By bor, by tamun, Nezek will be chayav, kofir will be patur. If that's the case, I can't use the Kal V'chomer of Nezek to teach me something about kofir, because Nezek is differentiated from kofir, it has a chumrah in it. So when it says, I don't have a problem with that, meet kelim. I'll learn out that the case here is kelim, and we know that kelim are turim from Nezek in a bor. So there, they're patur from kofir, and they're also patur from Nezek. In that instance, you could learn the Kal V'chomer. Or it says, Mal kelim, sheish nan beish. Wait a minute, when it comes to Eish, you are chayav for the destruction of kelim. So the Gemara says, no problem, it's kelim tmunim. The case here is a case where the utensils or the items are covered up. You have kelim inside of a sack that if they fell into a bor, you'd be patur because they are kelim, and kelim are pturim in a bor, as well as the fact that if you have items wrapped up in a sack and the fire burns them up, those are tamun and you'd be patur. So in both of those instances, if you use kelim tmunim for the Kal V'chomer by Eish and Bor, you're patur for Nezek in that case. And you're patur from Kofir. So there's no differentiation between Kofir and Nezek there. And yet, despite that fact, we still say that when it comes to Reshut Rabim, Shein V'Regel are patur, and in Reshut HaNizak they are Chayav, then I should learn from that, that by Kofir, just like by Shein V'Regel, you're patur from Nizakim in Reshut Rabim, and you're Chayav, Shalem, in the Reshut HaNizak, certainly by kofir of Karen, which is chatzi kofir, according to Yosef Glili, according to Rabbi Tarfon, you should be chayav kofir shalem in the reshut and izak from his kavachomer from Shem Beregel, but the kavachomer is about Shem Beregel and izakin, and therefore I can't prove to you anything about Shem Beregel by kofir. Gemara says, malan kelim tmunim sheishnam ba'adam. Wait a minute, that still has a din by Adam HaMazik. He'll be chayav for tamun or kelim tmunim by Nezek, but he's patur by kofir, because we have the limud of alav velo ala adam. That's the case. Once again, you have a chumrah by Nezek that doesn't apply by kofir. If that's the case, without kofir as being the kal v'chomer, you cannot learn from Shein V'Regel to Karen, because Shein V'Regel and Nizakin might be unique because of the fact that you're chayav for more instances, like that Adam HaMazik, which isn't true by kofir. El alav shmamina, you must come to the conclusion over here, mikofir de regel mighty law, that those whole limud comes out of kofir from regel, which Rabbi Tarfon is saying, if you're patur and reshut harabim from kofir of Shein V'Regel, yet you're chayav kofir shalem in the reshut hanizak, then certainly by Karen, where you're chayav chatzi kofir in the reshut harabim, like Rabbi Yosef Glili, certainly you should be chayav kofir shalem in the reshut hanizak. And from there you would prove, al ma'ika kofir b'regel. It's clear that kofir does have application by regel, shma mina. So that is the Gemara's conclusion, that when it comes to regel, that there is a din of kofir. That makes a lot of sense, that there is kofir by regel, because if you go back to what you suggested before, that you're going to learn it out of Nezek and not from kofir, makes sense to this kofir by regel, because had you consider the fact that there was no kofir by regel, and you want to make like the suggestion before, that we're going to learn it out of Nezek to kofir, lifruch, then you have a pircha, forget about the four and the age and the Adam, you have a problem in regel itself. Malin izakim de regel, sheken yeshnam de regel. Wait a minute, there's a difference within regel. Regel has application by Nezek, does not have application by kofir. So how can you draw a kal v'chomer from regel and then learn to Karen? The problem is regel itself in izakim is differentiated from kofir. By Nezek you are chayav, by kofir you're not. And therefore you could not extrapolate the din of Nezek to the case of kofir, because we see that Nezek has different rules. By regel and shein it's chayav, and it's not true by kofir. So it must be that by kofir you are chayav. El alav shmamina, mikofir de regel, mighty la. From there you learn out from kofir of regel that it has application. Alma ika kofir beregel shmamina. From here the Gemara concludes that there is such a concept as kofir by regel, and based on what Rabbi Tarfon's limud shows you, that underlying Rabbi Tarfon's limud is a belief that kofir has application by shein beregel. And now the next Mishnah begins something that we've already quoted earlier on in the Masechta, which is Adam Muad Biodam. A person is considered to be Muad no matter what. Ben Shogeg, Ben Bemezid. Whether they do it unintentionally or they do it intentionally. Ben Er, whether they are awake. Ben Yashen, whether they are sleeping. Simet en Chavero, person who knocks out or blinds the eye of his friend. Yishiberet HaKelim, and broke Kelim at the same time. Mishalim Nezek Shalem, he pays full Nezek for that. That the Gemara will deal with what exactly the case is. But here we have at least a statement in the Mishnah that Adam is considered to be Mu'ad Li'olam. How far we take that Adam is Mu'ad Li'olam, comes up in a case of the Yerushalmi, which the Rabbeinu Chananel quotes over here. Rabbeinu Chananel says that the Yerushalmi tells us that Amar Yitzchak Matnita B'Shayu Shnehem Yishenim. The only entire case where you're Chayav when you're sleeping is when both of you are sleeping next to each other. V'Haya Achad Yashen. If one person is already sleeping, and then another person comes and puts himself down next to the first person who's sleeping, the person who sleeps there second is the problem. So therefore, if the person who's already asleep damages the person who came later, it's the person who came later's problem. The real question as to why that is the case is here, as a machloket, the Bali HaTosafot, and Daf Chav Zayin explained the reason being, is because when we say Adam Muad Olam, that is limited. That means that in a case of pure onus, in a case where it's absolutely accidental and not your fault at all, we will make you patur. And therefore, the Bali Tosafot says, in Yushalmi, the reason you are patur when the second guy comes and sleeps next to you is because you didn't know about it. You were already sleeping. You couldn't have taken any more preventative measures. When the other person comes and sleeps there, you are a complete onus. And since you're a complete onus, therefore you're patur for any damage you do. This individual came and slept there afterwards. On the other hand, the Ramban in Baba Metzia makes it clear that when we say Adam Muad Olam, means Muad Olam, even in a case of complete onus, that the Adam is always Chayav. So So then why over here are you patur when the individual, the second individual comes and sleeps there? Because he is a posheya. His being a posheya exempts you because he's the party that caused the problem. And since he's a posheya, you're not chayav because he caused the damage or he is the cause of the problem. So the Ramban here sees the patur not stemming from the fact that you're completely innocent or an ones over here, but rather from the fact that the second individual who laid down there is a posheya or a mu'ad. And for that reason, he's considered to be the mazik, and that's why you are patur. But that machloket really revolves around a key element as to whether there's a concept of ones gamur with regards to Adam who's mu'ad olam. How literally do we take this Adam mu'ad olam? The Ramban takes it very literally and says there's no exemptions whatsoever. The only time you're not going to be chayav is when someone else is responsible for the problem. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot say there are exemptions when you are a complete ones. Now the Gemara continues and says, Tani simat en chaviro dumya d'shiber takilim. That in the Mishnah it seems to compare between the case in where you knock out the eye of the individual and a case where you break the kelim. Mahatam nezek in arba'ad varim lo. Just like over there by the kelim, when you do the damage, you're chayav for nezek, but you're not chayav for the other four things. Af simat en chaviro. So too, when you knock out the friend's eye, nezek in arba'ad varim lo. That you're chayav for the nezek, the damage that's not. But not for the Arbad Varim, then Tsar, Ripoy, Shevet, and Boshet, you're not obligated in that case. One wants to know, Menahane Mile, where do we know that that's the case, or how do we know that's true? Amr Chizkiah, Bechein Tana, Debe Chizkiah, we hear this from Chizkiah, and also we have a Breita that's brought in the Big Midrash of Chizkiah, Amr Kra. The Pasuk says, Petza, Tachat, Patza. When it comes to compensation, there are a list of items that are mentioned in the Pasuk over there. And from each of those items, the Gemara learns out something. And one of those items that says is Petza Tachat Patza, which is V'chiyanutsu Anashim Nagpu Ishara. In a case where there are two people that are quarreling and some damage happens over there, the Pasuk says Ayin Tachat Ayin, Shein Tachat Shein, Yad Tachat Yad, Regel Tachat Regel, Kviya Tachat Kviya, Petza Tachat Patza, Chabura Tachat Chabura. From each one of those items, not here, but the Gemara later on in the Masechta will learn something out. Gemara is suggesting here that Petza Tachat Patza teaches you, Amakra, Petza Tachat Patza, the Chayvola Shogei Kemizid, Balones Keretzon, to teach you that you are obligated in the case of Nezek, of Petza Tachat Patza, no matter what the circumstance is, whether you are intentional, unintentional, whether it was done by accident or done willingly. It's coming to teach you that in an instance where Simat Ein Chaveiro, where you damage the eye of your friend, you're only obligated for the Nezek, but not for the Tsar, Ripoy, Shevet, and Boshet. The reason as to why that is true, Rashi over here claims, is because the opening line of the Psukim over there, the opening line of the Psukim is there, V'chiruvun anashim, that when they are fighting or quarreling, in an instance where there was intent to damage, or there was a kavanah, or a fight that was going on, that's what drives the obligations of those other types of payments or compensation. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel over here suggests that it stems from, which is the continuation of the pasuk that Rashi quoted before, v'chiruvun anashim, v'kai ish et reu be'evin o be'egrof, v'lo yamut v'nafal mishkav. So there, the Rabbeinu Chananel suggests that there's a parallel between evin and egrof. Evin dumya de'egrof, the stone similar to the fist. My grof di'le yedi'ah, just like by a fist where a person is doing it intentionally and trying to hit, av evin di'le yedi'ah. Therefore, so too by the evin, it has to be of a similar type of damage that is done, which means it has to be intent to do damage. And therefore, you're only chayav in the dalet varim when you have yidiyah and kavanah. You have to have knowledge that you're trying to do damage, as well as the fact that you have intent to do damage. And therefore, in this instance, the reason why you're chayav for the nezek and not for the dalet varim is because over here, there was either a lack of yidiyah or really a lack of intent to do this type of damage. Mar says, how can you say that? We already need Petza Tachat Patza for a different limud. Hamibayle li ten tsar b'makom nezek. That we learn already to teach you that even when you're obligated to pay nezek, you still have to pay for the pain or the tsar that is involved. Meaning that the suggestion, this way Rashi and Tosafot learn over here, there would have been a possibility that if you did damage in a way that doesn't really cause damage or a diminution in value of the individual, you would have to pay tsar for the pain that you caused the individual in these instances. So that's what the pasuk comes to teach you, that when there is nezek, even though there's damage, and you're paying for that diminution of value, you still have to pay for the tsar, that pain that is there. Baalei Tosafot bring that the Gemara in other places seems to say the opposite, that it's more obvious that when you're paying for nezek, you also have to pay for the tsar. How do I know when there isn't nezek that you also pay for the tzar? And there the Balei Tosafot explained the nature of the damage differently in each of these cases in order to have it reconciled between the two different Gemaras. Gemara says, that's okay, we can learn both things from here. Kazim kein lichtov kra petza bipatza. It could have just said petza bipatza, my tachat petza. What is the addition of the word tachat uvir? Shmamina tarte, that you can learn out both things here from this limud, both the fact that when there is nezek, there's also an obligation of tzar, as well as the fact that when there is not intent to do damage, whether it's from Rashi because of kiruvun anashim, or from the Rabbeinu Hananel because of Eben or Igrov, in those instances, we will still obligate you in nezek despite the fact that you're not chayav in the other four items, in the other four dvarim. So Tosfot asks over here, if we're learning outside from Petza Tachat Patza, and from that same posuk, we're learning out the fact that you're obligated, whether it's mezid or shogeg, that should imply that not only you chayav for nezek in cases of lack of intent, so too you should be chayav for tzar in those cases. The Balei Tosfot suggests that the ptur of shogeg comes to be or exempt you as much as possible. So therefore, we're going to assume that you're ptur unless we have a specific ribui that says that you are chayav. And the only thing we have a ribui for is nezek in this instance. So then the Gemara brings up a number of cases that are very similar, that have slight nuances between them. In each of the cases, they're going to give us halachot that apply in a broad spectrum of issues, which is Amar Rabba, Haita Evin Munachat Lo Becheiko. Person was laying down, and there was a stone that was laying on his chest. Lo Yikir Ba, he had no idea that the stone was there. Vamad Vinafla, he stands up and the stone falls off of him and does damage. Le'inyan Nizakin Chayav. For Nezek, you are Chayav, because we just proved from Petza Tachat Patza that you're Chayav for Nezek no matter how it comes about. For the Arba Advarim, you're Patur, because we just learned out that Arba Advarim only come about when there's intent for damage that is lacking over here, that is not the case over here. Le'in in Shabbat, for Shabbat, for instance, if the stone rolled away from him and went Dalet Amot Rishut Rabim, and went from Yeshut Yachid to Rishut Rabim, which is a violation of the Melachot on Shabbat, there you're Patur, because Melachet Machshevet Asra Torah. Torah only asered or made restricted or a violation of something that you have intent to do. Over here, you have no intent to move the item from one location to the other. Since you have no intent over here, it's not called Melechet Machshevet. Inyan Galut Patur. When it comes to Shogeg, if the stone rolled off the individual and Chas V'Shalom killed someone accidentally, you will be Patur. Because, as Rashi notes over here, that the only time that you're called a Shogeg, Maken Nefesh Bishgaga, is only when you had knowledge of the item, and then you forgot about it. But if you never knew about it, and you had no knowledge of the rock being there ever, then you're not going to be Chayav Galut. The Balei Tosafot explained that the reason that is because the word Shkaga appears a multitude of times by the case of Galut and Shogeg, and therefore it has a different din than Shogeg B'chol HaTorah Kula. The rest of the Torah, it doesn't matter whether you know about it, and then you forgot about it, or whether you never paid heed to the item. In both of those cases, you're considered to be a Shogeg. Whereas by the case of Galut, the Torah's specific necessity that it be shogeg implies that there had to be some sort of yediyah beforehand, that you had knowledge of this beforehand. Le'in eved, in that case, if the stone did damage to his servant, his eved kanani, knocked out his tooth, or knocked out his eye, by which we know in the psukim, if that happens, chi yekeh ish et ein abdo et ein amato b'shichata, b'chofshi shalchenu tachat eino, and the same is true by Shane, that they go free as a penalty to the Adon for the fact that he knocked out their eye or their shein. Over here, it was done unintentionally. Therefore, what is the din? The Gemara says that's plukta de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel de Rabbanan. That is machlok between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Rabbanan. The Tanya, we have a bright. Harei Shaya Rabo Rofe. His master, the owner of the Eved Kanani, was a doctor. Va'amarlo, the Eved says to his master, Choleni, can you put in some ointment into my eye? B'sim'a. And he ends up blinding him in giving that treatment. Chatur li shini. Can you drill a hole? Can you do something with my tooth to fix the toothache? Vipila. And he knocks out his tooth by accident. Sichek ba'adon. The Eved Kanani can laugh at his master. Vietzei l'cheirut. And he goes free. Because the master knocked out his tooth or blinded his eye. The Eved Kanani is now free. Even though the master here was intending to do it for the good, he was acting in the capacities as a doctor. Nevertheless, the end result is the fact that the tooth was knocked out or the eye was blinded, and therefore the Eved goes free. B'shem Galomer, b'shichata. That the Pasuk says b'shichata, which means that he destroyed it. Achi kavein l'shachata. Until he has clear intent to destroy it. So therefore, their machloket revolves around how much intent do you need over here. According to the Chachamim, you don't need intent over here. We just look at the result. Is the result that he has lost his tooth or lost his eye? He goes free. Similarly over here, where the rock fell off of his body and did that damage to the Eved, so too he'll go free because we don't look or care about what the intent was. The other hand, for Shimon Gamliel, it says, v'shichata, you need intent to do damage. And that's lacking over here where the doctor is giving treatment. He's not trying to damage him. He's trying to cure him. And therefore, it's lacking that intent. So too, when you stand up and the rock rolls off your body, over there, you're lacking in intent. That lack of intent makes it that you would be patur, or the Eved Kanani would not go free in that case. The Balei Tosafot over here asks from a case that is found in the Gemara in Kiddushin. And the Gemara in Kiddushin says, v'shichata, and here the Chachamim agree with this limud, which teaches you prat the moshit yodo b'mei shivcha, that excludes the case where you stick your hand into the maidservant's womb in order to birth the baby. And as you're doing that, you knock out or you blind the eye of the baby. Over there, you do not go free, or the baby doesn't go free, because it lacks in v'shichata. So the Balei Tosafot want to know, what's the difference? Why over there do the Chachamim agree that shichata, that intent, is important? Whereas over here, they say that shichata is not good enough to exempt you. So the Balei Tosafot over here say that you need two things in order to be exempt. You need one thing is the lack of intent. That's v'shichata, teaches you need a lack of intent. But you also have to be not involved with the particular item that you do damage to. In the case where you're birthing the baby, over there you had no intent to knock out the eye. You're in the process of birthing the baby. So therefore, when you knock out the eye, it was unintentional. But not only was it unintentional, you weren't working on the eye at all. And for that reason, you have two things that are positive for the Adon, and that's why the Adon does not get penalized, and the Eved Kanani does not go free in that case. Whereas in our case over here, the Adon was working on the eye, or he's working on the tooth. Over there, v'shichata, the lack of intent is not sufficient to exempt him in that case. And that is how the Balei Tosafot differentiate between these two cases. On the other hand, the Raivid over here says that the difference is that the case by the Ubar is different. When he knocked out the eye of the Ubar was not a seeing being at that time. He was inside the womb still. Therefore, his eye was not functioning as a seeing, quote-unquote, eye. Since it wasn't functioning as a seeing eye, when he knocks it out, that's not called Sima et Eino. That's why you're not penalized over there. But over here, where the eye was a functioning eye, then Vishichata, even though you did not intend to do it, nevertheless, it's considered as if you knocked out the eye, and you will be held responsible for that action. The Ravid also brings an alternate explanation that the reason that the Adon is patur by the case of the Ubar is because he doesn't see what he's touching. He doesn't know what he is touching or doing when he's pulling it out. He has no, not only intention for doing damage, he doesn't even know that he's touching the eye to know that he's involved with the eye. So again, here, the differentiation between that Gemara and Kiddushin, which Chachamim agreed to, versus the Gemara over here, you're going to have to create differences between them, and most of that revolves around how much intent do we require from the Adon. Obviously, the Chachamim say that the lack of intent is not sufficient. You need lack of intent plus something else. The Balei Tosafot say that plus is that you have to be doing something the to'elet ha'eved. You're doing something positive. Over there, you're birthing the baby with nothing to do with the eye. The Ravid says because you had no intent for the eye at all, and that's what gives you the exemption. Or the second answer in the Ravid is the fact that the eye wasn't the seeing eye before in order for you to damage it, be called that you knocked out the eye. So now the Gemara moves on to a slight variation on the case that we had before, which is Hikirba. It's a case where he knew the stone was on his chest, and then he forgot about it. V'shachacha, v'amad v'nafla, and then it fell down. In the case, Iyan Nizakim, Chayav. For Nezik, you're going to be Chayav once again, because he said it's irrespective of how it comes about. That's Adam Muad the Olam. In your Dalad Varim Patur, you're still Patur for the Dalad Varim, because there you do not have intent to do damage. And we need intent, whether that's from Rashi, Ki Urvun Anashim, or from the Rabbeinu Chananel at Grof and Evan. In your Galut Chayav, over here for Galut, you will be Chayav, Damakra, Bishkaga, that it happened unintentionally, Michlav, Dahavile Yidia, that you knew about it beforehand, and then you forgot about it. And over here, you do have that yediyah. As we said before, the Balei Tosafot think that that comes out of the fact that the word shkaga is repeated so many times in the parshia of Galut. As the Rashba says, it stems from the case that is brought in Dvarim when it deals with Arei Miklat in Galut, which it says, Asher Yavoet Re'ehu, that when he came into the forest where his friend was present, that means that he had to have some sort of knowledge that his friend was there, or that he used an axe, and he has to know that he's holding an axe in his hand. The Rashba says it comes out of the nature of the cases that the Torah gives as examples, that show you that he's aware of certain circumstances, whether that there's another party there or that he has an axe in his hand. And that teaches you that he knows or he had to have some knowledge beforehand. So over here where he has knowledge of the stone being there and forgot about it afterwards, that's good enough to obligate you in galut. In Shabbat Patur, again by Shabbat you're Patur because you're lacking in Melechet Makshevet. You don't have any intent to move the rock from here to another location. In Eved, once again by Eved Knani, it's the Plukta, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Rabbanan, which is unintentional knocking out of the eye or the tooth of the Eved Knani. What is the din there? Rabbanan say, too bad, and the Eved goes free. Shimon Gamliel says, V'shichata, there's lack of intent over here, and it does not go free. Nitkavein, here comes the third case. Nitkavein Lizrok Shtaim, V'zerak Arba. He intended only to throw two amot. In the end, it went four amot, or he threw it four amot. The end is Zakim Chayav. With regards to Nezek, again, he is Chayav, because it doesn't matter about your intent. The end of Dvarim Patur, because you had no intent to do damage. You never expected it to go the four amot. That lack of intent and Yediyah makes it that you're not Chayav for the Dal Dvarim. The end in Shabbat, Melechet Makshevet Be'inan. By Shabbat, you need Melechet Makshevet. And you're throwing it to Amot would not obligate you because that's less than the minimum requirement to be Chayav on Shabbat in Rishut Rabim. When it goes four, that was not your intent, and therefore you are Patur. In Galut, when it comes to Galut, it says Asher Lo Tzadak, that you did not lay in ambush and waiting for the party. Amar Rachmana, that's what the Pasuk says. Prat L'nitkaven Lizrok Shtaim Izrak Dalet. That comes to exclude the case where you threw it to Amot and it ends up going for Amot. Rashi over here brings two possible interpretations of what that means. One says that it says you are chayav galut, and one says that you are patur mi galut. Rashi says in the first interpretation, asher lo tzadah v'samti lecha makom. If you did not do it in a manner that was ambushing the other party, then you go into galut. That's prat nitkaven lizrok shtaim zrok arba, she'enem torat ki yazidish. That's not a case of intentional killing. And therefore, it is v'samti lecha makom. You have the ability to go then to the Arei Miklat. You're given permission to go to the Arei Miklat because you did not wait in ambush. You did not do this in a manner that was intentional killing. And therefore, you're allowed or given permission to go to the Arei Miklat. Lishna Achrina, Rashi brings a second interpretation, which is asher lo tzada, means that shelo nitkaven litzadeid, to bring it closer, or to move it in that direction, lizrok etzlo, to throw it towards him, there yanus. That only is the case where you are patur. But over here, where you're throwing the rock and you are moving it closer to the victim, over there you would not be allowed to go to galut because you did something that the pasuk says does not allow you to go to galut. Galut has a shelo tzada, that you did not bring the damaging item closer to the victim. Over here, you did bring it closer. It might have been you only brought it two amot and it ended up going four amot, but you brought it closer. In that case, you're not granted the right to go into galut. If you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he suggests the reason that you can't go into galut over here. It says, "Inyan galut v'shelo tzada prat lemitkaven lizrok bet v'zrak dalet dekarov lemezid." Over here, he's much closer to being a mezid v'lo mitkaper lo b'galut, and galut is not a sufficient punishment for him, and that's why he doesn't go to galut over here. That seems to accord more closely with the second interpretation that Rashi brings down, that the failure over here is that the pasuk says it has to be a case where you didn't bring it closer. Over here, you brought it closer to him, and that already might raise your level to not just being a shogeg, but being a shogeg karov de mezid, which galut is not sufficient, and therefore you don't go into galut. According to the first reasoning of Rashi, it says here that in this case you would go into galut, because this is under the rubric of a shelo tzada, that you do not wait and ambush the individual. In the second interpretation, it says that the only case you go into galut is when you did not bring the item closer to the victim. Over here, you did. Therefore, you would be exempt, or you would not allow to use galut. As a kaparan, Rabbeinu Chananel suggests that's because you're too close to a mezid in that case. And now the Gemara brings another case, permutation of these cases. Nitkaven lizrok arba v'zarak shmoneh. He intended to throw four amot, and in the end he threw eight amot. The inyan is zakim chayav. For Nezek again, he's chayav, because it doesn't matter what his intent is, he's chayav for damage that's done. The inyan dal dvarim patur. With regards to the dal dvarim, he's still patur because of the lack of intent over here, which we learned from chirivun or evener growth, that you are patur. In Shabbat, with regards to Shabbat, then bomer kol makom shetirtzeh tanuach in. If he says that doesn't matter where it falls, in that instance you will be chayav for the violation of Shabbat, because there, whether it goes four amot or eight amot, that is considered to be throwing or moving dalet amot on Shabbat, and you're chayav. You intended for an action that would be chayav on Shabbat, that's four amot, and ended up going eight amot. Now, that still would be lacking in Melechet Machshevet if you intended for four amot and it went eight amot because your intent was not carried out. On the other hand, if you say wherever it lands, it's good enough, then in that case you'll be chayav because the first throw of four amot was an obligatory type of throwing. Therefore, when it goes eight amot, you're chayav. That will not help you in the case of two amot. If you said, I'm throwing it two amot, and wherever it lands, that still will not help you because your intention there was to throw an amount that would not be chayav. If in the end it extended beyond that and became chayav, you would not be chayav because that's lacking in melechet machshevet. Inyan galut, asher lo tzada, prat l'nitkavin zrok arba v'zerak shmoneh. So again, by galut, you'll have the same libud we had before and the same question we had before as what that means. According to the first Lashon and Rashi, that means you go into galut. According to the second Lashon and Rashi and the Lashon of the Rabbeinu Chananel, it means that you do not go into galut. Yonevet plukta Rabbi Shimon Gamliel v'rabonin. With Evet Knani, again, goes back to Machloka, the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as to whether you need intent when you're knocking out the iron chain for him to go free. Valma Rabba. Now we go back to a din that we quoted back on Daf Yud Zayin, where it says, Zarak Kli Mirosh Agag, a person throws off a utensil from the roof. Ubacher Bishavro. And another person comes along and breaks it b'makel. He smacks it with a stick, with a baseball bat. You are patur. My taima. What's the reason that the individual is patur? Mna Tvira Tovar. He broke a broken utensil. Once the person threw it off the top of the roof, it's surely going to hit the ground and break. So when he took the baseball bat and swung at it, he was breaking a utensil that was already broken. According to Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot over here, the Gemara's conclusion back on Daf Yud Zayin is that we go after Ikara. Go after when you set the item in motion. When this person threw it off the roof, then he is Chayav over there because he put it into motion. And therefore, he's obligated because the Kli's eventuality is that it's going to break and be destroyed. And therefore, he is chayav. The person who hits it with the stick or the baseball bat afterwards is patur because he had an item that was already broken. And therefore, he didn't do anything that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And that's why he is patur. The Ramban, on the other hand, believes, and we saw this back on Daf Yud Zayin as well, Yud Zayin Amud Bet, Yud Chet Amud Aleph, that the Ramban believes over here that we go batar tovar mano. We go after the end part over here. And therefore, both parties are Paturim over here. The individual who threw it off the roof is Patur because it never reached the ground and broke. The person who hit the utensil is also Patur because he hit something that would have broken anyway. And therefore, the Ramban believes that both parties are Paturim over here. Both the person threw it off the roof as well as the party that hit it with the baseball bat down on the ground. The Ravid has a slight variation of the Ramban's view and says that the person who threw off the roof was patur, or is patur, because we don't know for certain it would have broken when it hit the ground, because somebody intercepted it and we never got the information we needed to obligate him over there, even though it seemingly would have broken and it reached the ground. Then, Rabba brings a second in. Vama Rabba, Zara Kli Mirosh Agag, Vayu Tachtav Karim O Kisatot. That it was a case where he threw it off the roof, but when he threw it off the roof, there were mattresses and pillows that laid down below, and they would have cushioned the fall of the Kli, and the Kli would have not broken in that case. Ubacher v'silkan, and someone else came along there and removed them. O kidem v'silkan, or he himself removed them before the Kli hit the ground. The Rabbeinu Chananel says that he has a string tied to these items, and he pulled the string to remove it. In those cases, you are patur. My time. What's the reason you're patur here? Bidono deshaja psuke mifsake gire. When he threw it off, his arrows were done. I mean, at the moment that the person threw it, his force or his effect on the Kli was fully done. At that moment, the Kli would not have broken because there were items down below that cushioned the fall of the item. And therefore, the person who threw it off is for sure patur. The question is, what about the person who pulled away the mattresses and the pillows at the bottom? Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot say over here, the person at the bottom that removes those items is patur. Because groma v'nizikin, that's considered to be groma. And since it's groma, the person down below is also patur because he didn't do anything that was direct damage. It was only groma. On the other hand, the Rif and the Rambam believe that the person down below is garmit. It's a more direct or closely correlated type of action that causes damage. But they say Rabba the Shitato believes that by garmi you are patur. And because you are patur by garmi, therefore Rabba believes over here that the guy below who pulled it away is also patur. But we, who paskin that garmi is chayav, then the person below who moved the karim kistot, or even the person himself, if he removed them, they would be obligated. And that's a big nafkamina here between the position of the Rambam and the Rif versus Rashi and Tosafot, as to whether the party down below is chayav. According to Rambam and the Rif, the answer is yes, because it's garmi, and we believe garmi is chayav. Whereas for the Rashi and the Tosafot, it's Grom of Nizikin, and they would be Patur, because we pass in Grom of Nizikin is Patur. Now, what is the distinction between Groma and Grami that maybe Rashi and the Balei Tosafot are differentiating their opinion from the Rif and the Rambam? That is because the question about whether the action you are taking is causing the direct Nezik over here. When do we consider it to be Grami is when the action that you took creates or does something directly that causes the damage of the Kli. Over here, where you're removing the item that would save the Kli from damage, that's not considered to be Grami, that's considered to be Grama. And therefore, Rashi and Tosafot believe that the case here is a case of Groma. On the other hand, the Rif and the Rambam believe that even when you're removing something that would have saved the Kli, that's still called Garmi, even though it's not an action that directly affects the Kli or directly contributes to the damage. I mean, that was an action of damage. They still call it Garmi. And that's the machloka between them here, as to whether that action of removing something that would have saved the Kli is considered to be Groma or Garmi. Now the Gemara brings another case, which is Amar Rabba, Zarak Tinok Merosh Hagag, someone threw a baby off the roof, which otherwise the baby will hit the ground and unfortunately pass away. Ba'acher v'kiblo b'saif, someone else intercepts the baby on a sword. Who is Chayav for the death of the baby over here? That, the Gemara says, is Plukta, the Rabbi Yehuda ben Matei Rabbanan. That is the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda ben Matei and the Rabbanan that we saw earlier in the Masechta, again, on Daf Yud, the Tanya. Hikau asara b'nei Adam, b'asara makolot. If 10 people hit an individual with 10 different sticks, ben bevat achat, ben bezer achazer, whether they did it simultaneously, or whether they did it sequentially, kulan nifturim, every one of them is patur. This is based on the pasuk that the Chachamim darshan, v'in en shekeh kol nefesh adam, that you have to kill the entirety of the individual, or you have to be the person who contributes to the death of the individual entirely. Over here, we can't say that because everybody was a contributor to the death of the individual. Whether they do it simultaneously or sequentially, each person is a contributor, and therefore we cannot obligate any one party over here. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda ben Teromer, b'zeh hazeh charon chayav. He agrees in the case where it's simultaneous, we can't differentiate, we can't tell who caused the death of the individual. But in the case where it is sequential, and the person dies after the last one who hits him, he is chayav mipnei shekirev mitato, because he's the one who brought the final blow that brought his mita about, which is Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira believes that it doesn't have to be that you kill the entirety of the individual, you just have to be the person who brings the final blow that kills the individual. And over here, the final person was the one who pushed him over the edge, and therefore he's going to be the one that is chayav when it's done in a sequential manner. And he darshins kol nefesh to mean kol nefeshi, any amount of death that is caused, as long as you are the final or the makib hepatish, then you're the one who is going to be responsible for the death. And similarly, over here in our case, the same would be true. If you're holding like the Rabbana, neither party would be chayav, because they're both contributory forces in the death of this baby over here, and we can't attribute it totally to one of the two parties. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yehuda ben Matera, the one who caught him on the sword was the one who finished off the baby or killed him before well in the end. And if we're going to Rabbi Yehuda ben Matera, you would be chayav in this case. Okay, we're going to stop here on the top of Chav Zayin Amalav, Chav Zayin Amalav, 2 lines down.